The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Derek Frost for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. And we'll start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the cover story headline, Growth on the Perimeter. Families from California, New York, and other big cities are settling down in the Triangle's three core counties, adding substantial purchasing power for the whole region. And the story begins inside the Triangle Business Journal with the second headline, Quest for Housing Ramps Up. As the Triangle welcomes new residents from out of state, demand for homes intensifies. And this is written by Kaylee Thompson. Entrepreneurs Cara Borenstein and husband Theo Marin moved themselves and their startup from a tiny one-bedroom apartment to a house in Durham, all the way from San Francisco, in the middle of the pandemic. Empty nesters Randy and Lori Croyle moved to the largest house they've ever owned, also in the middle of the pandemic, sight unseen, in a new Chapel Hill development, from cold northern Michigan. We started thinking about Raleigh, North Carolina, and I did a quick internet search on new construction in the Raleigh area, Randy Croyle says. The first website I looked at was called Westfall, which is here in Chapel Hill, and the first house I looked at, I said, I think this is it, Lori. Through negotiations, we got the place within 1 week of the time we saw it on the internet. The Croyles had owned two homes in Michigan and Arizona, were tired of traveling back and forth and wanted to downsize. Since the housing market was favoring sellers, they sold the homes in Michigan and Arizona and then moved to Chapel Hill in April 2021. Borenstein and Marin have a similar story about their trek from San Francisco to the Triangle. Borenstein says they had visited the Triangle for years to see family, so they'd had their eye on moving here. Once they were accepted into the TechStars program, which is based anywhere in the U.S., they decided to move and recruit from the Triangle talent pool, which they found to be even deeper than they anticipated. They moved in January 2021 and say finding a home was the easy part, getting acclimated to a new coast and different way of living, along with finding people to connect with during the pandemic was the hard part. But in both cases, the Croyles and Borenstein and Marin are part of a larger flock of migration to the Triangle that's accelerated since 2020, as the pandemic upended people's routines and the Triangle's quality of life and plethora of opportunities proved appealing. Thousands of new people have moved here from out of state, and that influx has been felt in the housing market where intense demand has meant skyrocketing prices. The key is that North Carolina has unusually high income and migrants, says economist Adam Perdue of the Texas Real Estate Research Center. Influx drives up prices. Most who move to the Triangle are coming from California and New York, with a handful from Illinois, the state of Washington, and the Washington, D.C. area, according to data from the Internal Revenue Service. Coming with these new residents is money, and plenty of it. People who moved into Durham County with the highest adjusted gross income, or AGI, came from California. Of those movers, San Francisco County was the top, with an average AGI of $132,846. The median home value as of July 31 in Durham County is $427,865, a more than 50% increase since the end of 2020 when it was $277,367. Wake County, however, is a mixed bag. The highest adjusted gross income was from King County, Washington, which includes Seattle, and was $182,125. The median home value in Wake shot up to $506,813, another 50% increase from 2020's number of $333,570. Median home value skyrocketed between 2020 and 2022, and though the housing market has started to level off, it's still nowhere near the point it was before the pandemic. Sellers are elated, and buyers are left wondering why they can't get a reasonably priced home. All signs seem to point to the massive wealth increase. However, housing market and economic experts agree that it's a perfect storm of variables. Supply and demand, a shortage of houses, and high-wealth movers are all contributing factors to why the housing market has shifted so rapidly. Residential real estate appraiser Stacy Anfinson says the pandemic accelerated all of these factors, especially as people look to move out of crowded, expensive cities. Remote work allowed them to do that. Ann Finson says Wake County has a housing supply issue. Since so many people started moving here and current residents wanted to move out of apartments or roommate situations and into homes, the housing supply fell short. With such a great demand for houses, prices increase. The more buyers there are, the higher the offers, which means many homes have been sold above asking price. This affects the other home values in that neighborhood, so if one or two people from California and New York each buy a home well above the asking price in the same neighborhood, that drives up the price for the rest of the neighborhood, even if they aren't comparable in size. In addition, the pandemic shifted people's preferences in a home, says Joel Kahn, vice president of economic and industry forecasting at Mortgage Bankers Association. Working remotely meant more people needed a home office or more space to spread out. The economy shutting down and social distancing drove more people to install home gyms and look for more outdoor space for their kids to play. We were undersupplied coming into it, the pandemic. The change in home preference and the initial wave of moving exacerbated the inventory issue and drove home price growth a lot higher than everyone expected, Kahn says. With more people moving and a large demand for houses, those who have higher income are in a better position to acquire a house. On average, the incomes and where they were coming from were about $10,000 to $15,000 more than the median income in Durham. That gives them obviously more buying power, particularly during the pandemic when there was very little new supply going on. It just makes sense that they can outbid anyone, says David Berger, a professor of economics at Duke University. With that, Purdue says wealthier people tend to want larger lots, which affects land prices for everyone else. To address the home shortage, new homes are being built and, in many cases, on larger lots. Larger lots and newer construction contribute to increased home prices. Larger lots mean fewer homes, which creates a smaller supply and, in turn, even more demand. Location is key. Since people coming from denser cities are used to being close to everything, they're going to use their wealth to buy land and or homes that are as close as possible to where they want to be. That increases the price in those locations. This was a key reason for the price hike in homes in 2021, according to Anfinson. It also pushed North Carolina residents with lower incomes to move further out. Since they also had the ability to work from home but wanted to stay in the Triangle, they chose to move to smaller towns within Wake and Durham counties, along with surrounding counties such as Johnston, Harnett, and Orange. Some of the out-of-state movers chose the smaller towns and counties as well. The highest average AGI coming to Orange County was $229,542. From New York County. Harnett and Johnston counties got in on the action too, with Fairfax County, Virginia bringing in $133,462 and $117,864 respectively. Moving to these counties with smaller towns gave them more space, both inside and out, for a lower price. And even if they had to commute because the Triangle is geographically flat, commute times are short. However, this raised the prices in the smaller towns and counties as well, because those who lived closer to downtown Raleigh and Durham with higher AGI now took that money out to more rural areas with lower average incomes. Today, the housing supply remains backlogged, and while sales prices fell in the last quarter, it's slow, according to Kahn. The median sales price for homes in the Triangle for August was $405,000, down from June's median sales price of $421,757, according to data from the Triangle Multiple Listing Services. In recent weeks, we have seen lots of stories and lots of reports with data showing that we're starting to see more price cuts. Houses are sitting on the market a little bit longer, so there has been a little bit of a cooling just given that mortgage rates shot up so quickly. It priced a lot of people out of the market, but also induced a lot of uncertainty, Kahn says. Even if someone were willing to buy a house with a 6% mortgage rate, they might be holding off. They might want to see if home prices or home price growth will cool off even more, or maybe even the mortgage rate will come back down. The 30-year fixed mortgage rate has more than doubled from 3% in 2021 to near 7% in 2022, according to Federal Reserve economic data. Anfinson says the trend for interest rates is increasing, which is another underlying factor for housing prices. The Federal Reserve raised interest rates by 0.75 percentage points in late September, the fifth increase in the past 6 months, putting the federal interest rate at 3.25%, the highest it's been since 2008, during the last economic recession. Higher interest and mortgage rates might scare buyers out of committing to a 30-year mortgage, especially if they believe the market will cool down. You can walk away from an apartment lease. It'll just go on your credit score. You can't walk away from a mortgage payment. That's a tough thing to commit to, and at least an apartment is 1 year. You can suck it up for 1 year, but 30 years on a mortgage is like, oh my gosh, that's a long time to commit to do something, Anfinson says. Along with that, some people are in homes they bought at the lower mortgage rate, and the idea of buying a new home at a much higher mortgage rate is not compelling. Even if the owners are looking for more space, they would rather wait and see if rates will fall and prices will continue to drop. Lots of homeowners refinanced their homes over the last few years, so they're sitting in interest rates that are very low. So if you move, you would have to get a much higher interest rate. They're kind of locked in, Berger says. Because house prices are trickling down a little bit and because people refinanced into very affordable mortgages, there's very little incentive to list your house now, he says. Berger says he believes prices will fall moderately, possibly another 5 or 10%, but not much more because people are still moving to the area at a high rate. While out-of-state movers have the income to stay in their homes even with the higher mortgage rate, it's still up in the air whether they'll stay in that home and in the Triangle. Anfinson says the area is historically transient as the average year of home ownership is about 4 years, but in recent years there have been more people moving in than moving out. Working from home has also changed that dynamic, in that if employers continue to let people work from home, there's no reason for them to sell their house and move back to more dense cities. But it's also dependent on the economy and whether it will hold, and if people continue to keep their jobs in the months ahead. Berger says people in real estate are split on whether the out-of-state movers will stay, if it's a permanent or temporary relocation. Ultimately, he doesn't believe people will leave in the next year or two. That work from home changed the landscape, and people continue to flock to the area since it's still relatively affordable, especially for out-of-state movers with higher incomes. Both the Croyles and Borenstein and Marin have no intention of leaving now that they are here. The Croyles love their home and its location. One of their sons lives in Cary with his wife and two young children, and say this will more than likely be the last house they live in. And Borenstein says, it's been really positive and we love it here. We're not going anywhere. And there's a companion article with this cover story headlined, Wake County residents are flocking to Johnston, but the rich ones are moving to Chatham. Many Wake County residents leaving the county are moving to Johnston County, but the high earners are flocking to Chatham County. Those are some of the main takeaways from a Triangle Business Journal examination of Internal Revenue Service and U.S. Census data that offers a look at how intra-triangle migration patterns have played out recently. The data show that Wake County residents are either looking for a cheaper cost of living or a slower-paced environment. Chris Johnson, Economic Development Director for Johnston County, says the Triangle has expanded its geographic boundaries to include places like Johnston, a big benefit for his community. The new residents may live in Joco, but most identify as living in Raleigh, Johnson says. When my wife and I traveled to Chicago this weekend for business, I referred to living outside Raleigh when asked. The IRS data show that between 2019 and 2020, 3,695 tax filers moved from Wake County to Johnston. On the inverse, there were only 1,829 who did the opposite, moving from Johnston to Wake. Wake residents moving to Johnston are largely of the middle class. As the IRS data said, the average adjusted gross income for Wake residents moving to Johnston is $56,000 a year. That means for people moving to Johnston, the motivation is likely cost of living based, as home buyers can get a much bigger bang for their buck in Johnston. The median sales price for homes in Johnston was $380,000 in July, while in Wake it was $489,000, according to data from the Triangle Multiple Listing Services. The flood of people leaving Wake for homes in Johnston County has helped drive up prices in Johnston by more than 50% since 2020. The story is much different for Wake residents moving to Chatham. Between 2019 and 2020, there were 614 Wake tax filers who moved to Chatham. On the inverse, 369 moved from Chatham to Wake. The striking thing about the Wake residents who moved to Chatham, their average income was $145,000. Chatham County's luxury home market has flourished for years, offering communities nestled in rolling hills and relative isolation, which attracts wealthy residents who can afford larger lot sizes. But as large companies start coming to the county, like VinFast and its 7,500-person electric vehicle manufacturing plant, the county will need affordable housing for blue-collar workers. I think we will see the supply shift to meet that demand, says Michael Smith, president of the Chatham Economic Development Corporation. We have not yet had the large-scale employment like VinFast to generate the demand for more workforce housing. With their arrival and others like FedEx and VinFast suppliers, there will be a new market for that type of housing, and we will be able to attract a more diverse populace. Another hotspot for Wake residents leaving the county is Franklin County. There were 1,327 Wake tax filers who moved to Franklin and 749 that moved from Franklin to Wake. So Franklin gained a net of 578 new tax filers from Wake County between 2019 and 2020. The average income of Wake residents moving to Franklin was $60,000. Accelerated by the growth of transportation corridors like Highway 401 and US 1, our residents find that they can settle into a nice, peaceful community but still have access to resources in the Triangle area, says Kim Denton, Franklin County Manager. And this article was written by Evan Hoopfer. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle happenings, written by Managing Editor Dane Huffman. Corridor of Change. The return of the NC State Fair has brought fresh energy to the Blue Ridge Corridor, but a pile of rubble across the street from the North Carolina Museum of Art gives a peek into the region's future. For years, the area had languished as sort of an attic for state government, but now a mail service center directly across from the museum has been demolished, setting in motion the rise of the new 10-story home for the North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services. The DHHS move is critical on two fronts. One, it will free up space at Dix Park, and two, it moves thousands of workers to a new headquarters on Blue Ridge Road, increasing the demand for amenities there. DHHS is expected to have its 2,500 employees off the Dix campus by July 2025, a key development as the new bandwidth headquarters comes online right around the corner. Not far away, the Centennial Authority is weighing options to make the PNC Arena and its environment more of a draw as the region's makeover is underway. The Sports Business Journal, interestingly enough, is reporting that Carolina Hurricanes owner Tom Dundon is a huge fan of pickleball. It notes that Dundon's plans for a massive overhaul of the 23-year-old PNC Arena includes developing an entertainment district with a concert venue. The State Fair, meanwhile, isn't back to the massive crowds it had before the pandemic, but is seeing a big rise since a year ago. Last year, the fair drew 824,328, its lowest since 2008. This year, crowds are up, with 115,586 fans coming on the first Saturday. That's down from the 10-year average of 135,460, not including 2021, but well above the 83,739 who came on the first Saturday a year ago. Violin Shop opens new location. A Raleigh shop has a new home. John Montgomery opened on Hillsborough Street in 1987 and has made and restored violins for decades. But Hillsborough Street is changing, and so Montgomery has moved to Oakwood's 410 Morrison Street. Montgomery Violin sells finely crafted violins, cellos, and bows, and specializes in repair and restoration. Legacy retailer makes a comeback. Toys R Us is back from the dead. Well, kind of. The iconic retailer is opening toy shops inside Macy's stores across the country, including three in the Triangle. Customers can head to Crabtree Valley Mall, the streets at South Point, and Triangle Town Center to find a piece of their childhood. Toys R Us, founded in 1957, was a leading seller of toys and related products for decades before filing for Chapter 11 bankruptcy in the fall of 2017. The company took a fast tumble to liquidation in 2018, and WHP Global acquired a majority stake in the entity, retaining the rights to the Toys R Us brand. Since then, talks of reviving the brand have circulated, but to little avail. Now, the brand has formed a partnership with Macy's to install 451 Toys R Us shops in its stores. We hope Toys R Us kids of all ages discover the joy of exploration and play within our shops and families create special memories together, Nada Devere, Chief Merchandising Officer at Macy's, said in a press release. Big plans in Oxford as new chef hired. A restaurant slated to open in Oxford has brought on a Raleigh native as executive chef. Laura Brooker will help lead Verdigris, part of the Oakford Oaks Distillery development in downtown Oxford. The development is slated to open this year. Brooker is known for founding Swanee Events near downtown Durham and the Duke University campus, a catering business. At Verdigris, the goal is to bring a fine dining option to Granville County by offering high-quality seafood, chicken, steak, fresh vegetable, cheeses, and charcuterie. The area is growing quickly, and I really like how welcoming the Oxford community has been to me and other folks choosing to make it a place where they work and play, Brooker says. I believe my whole career has led me to this point. Race to benefit Boys and Girls Club. A local restaurant owner is looking to get 1,000 runners this year in a 5K that raises funds to support the Brentwood Boys and Girls Club. Brentwood has become a key home for the Triangle's Hispanic community, and Angela Salamanca, who owns Centro Mexican Restaurant in downtown Raleigh and Ex Voto in Durham, is raising money for key after-school programs at the club. This year will be the 10th day of the Dead 5K that Salamanca started in honor of her deceased sister, and the goal is to help those involved process grief in a positive way. And finally, new project rises in Research Triangle Park. A $70 million mixed-use project at the Hub in Research Triangle Park is going vertical. Horseshoe at the Hub is a 125,000-square-foot trio of buildings for retail and office space, shaped similarly to a horseshoe. White Point of Charlotte is the lead developer on the project. The plan is for 100,000 square feet of office space and 25,000 for retail, but that could change. Despite delays and costs rising from $50 million to $70 million, White Point still expects to open in the fourth quarter of 2023. So far, one public company has signed a lease, but White Point hasn't released who yet. The horseshoe overlooks 16 acres of green space, which will have a live venue and central plaza with a splash pad. And now we'll turn to some of the top stories in the Triangle Business Journal. The first one written by David Pertell, Triangle among top U.S. growth markets. The Triangle is expected to be among the fastest growing economies in the U.S. in 2022, driven by thriving tech and biotech sectors. The region is projected to see economic growth of 3.4% this year in terms of GDP, according to a new report from the Kenan Institute of Private Enterprise at UNC Chapel Hill's Kenan Flagler Business School. The report examines the nation's 50 largest metropolitan areas and is part of the American Growth Project, a new Kenan Institute initiative that will provide a detailed look at localized economies. Raleigh and Durham sit at number 4 in the rankings, which puts the San Francisco Bay Area at the top of the list, followed by Austin, Texas, and Seattle. Charlotte ranks number 8. Also on the list is Greensboro at number 45. The report notes the Triangle has more than $1 billion worth of biotech laboratory construction underway and hosts a bevy of large tech companies. The report highlights Apple's plan for a $1 billion campus in Research Triangle Park, as well as the tech giant's plan to pour hundreds of millions of dollars into schools and infrastructure in the state. The Triangle is forecast to have a GDP of $189 billion in 2022. The figures are $1.38 trillion for the Bay Area and $233 billion for Charlotte. But the Triangle's relatively small population, the second smallest in the top 10 after New Orleans, means the region is punching above its weight. The study assigns economic activity to where workers and their offices are located, but one of the challenges economists are grappling with is the rise of remote work and assigning where economic activity is occurring. It's one thing to measure a region's economic activity if employees are working remotely from their homes near their office. But if people are working remotely from Boise, which we know that's a trend, then it gets a bit more complicated, says Gerald Cohen, chief economist with the Kenan Institute. About those working remotely from the Idaho capital without an employer's office nearby. It's a work in progress, he says. And our next article is written by Kaylee Thompson. The headline, new projects coming downtown. Raleigh clears new towers for up to 20 and 40 stories in downtown districts. Downtown Raleigh is going to keep growing with the recent approval of new projects up to 20 and 40 stories in height. The Raleigh City Council on October 18 voted unanimously to approve a rezoning for 121 and 131 South Boylan Avenue, which sits across Hargett Street from Y Hill Kitchen and Brewing and is adjacent to the Block 83 development in Glenwood South, from 7 stories up to 20 stories with conditions. The 0.69-acre site is owned by Neary Coleman Associates, which is partnering with Tennessee-based developer Hutton to develop the site. The rezoning application indicates the project will include residences and office and retail space. The maximum number of units allowed is 231, while there can be up to 194,000 square feet of office space and up to 19,000 square feet of retail space. The properties currently hold houses that are rented out. Molly Stewart with Morningstar Law Group told the council the request for taller development is because the adjoining property for an 18-story tower in Block 83 includes a 7-story parking garage. Neary and Hutton's initial plans called for a 7-story mixed-use project, but when they saw Block 83's plans, they reconsidered. Stewart says they now want to make the first 7 stories ground-level retail and a parking garage with residences on top. The Boylan Avenue site will be Hutton's 4th multifamily project, the others being in Arkansas, South Carolina, and Florida. Neary Coleman also owns 118 South Boylan Avenue, which is across the street, and 115 St. Mary Street. Hotel site to change. The council also voted unanimously to approve up to 40 stories with conditions at 200 West Lane and 300 North Dawson Streets. The 0.95-acre site includes the Longleaf Hotel and Lounge and the property next to it. The previous zoning was up to 12 stories. Owner Loden Properties of Raleigh will develop the space for office and retail according to the rezoning application. Residents will also likely be involved as it will be a tower allowing for a maximum of 1,056 residential units. More than 1 million square feet of office space and 31,047 square feet of retail is allowed. Loden previously said that if the rezoning is approved, the 2-year-old boutique hotel will become part of the new development. The Longleaf Hotel sits along Capitol Boulevard and serves as a gateway into downtown. Loden acquired the property in 2019 for $6.5 million before turning a Days Inn into the 57-room hotel it is today. Raleigh education startup raises $3.5 million, this story by Zach Ezone. As its revenue and customer base doubles, a Raleigh-based education startup has raised $3.5 million. The company, Element 451, offers a student admissions and marketing platform that's intended to help colleges and universities better engage with students to improve enrollment and retention. The financing will support the company as it invests in areas like behavioral marketing and one-to-one student-centered communication, the company says. California-based Blueprint Equity, a technology-focused firm, led the funding round. While the company's statement didn't include the size of the round, Element 451 reported raising $3.5 million of equity from 4 investors in an October 12 securities filing. Proceeds from the raise will be used for working capital. The financing follows the company raising more than $3 million last year and $1 million in 2019, according to securities filings. The company has experienced rapid growth over the last few years, doubling its revenue and customer count year over year since 2020. Element 451 works with institutions of all sizes, including local schools such as Wake Technical Community College. And now we turn to the On Tech and Aviation page written by Lauren Onisorge. Will major projects deliver for the state? Apple, VinFast, Wolfspeed are among those with big plans. By all accounts, 2022 has been a blockbuster year for mega projects in the Greater Triangle, from Wolfspeed's plans to bring a next-generation semiconductor manufacturing operation to VinFast's planned automobile assembly plant. But job pledges are just promises, and promises, a new report out of the North Carolina Department of Commerce shows, can be broken. New numbers show that when it comes to projects announced as incentivized wins for the state, most never actually fulfill their pledges, a reality that some say should have officials tempering their enthusiasm about high-profile economic development wins. Commerce data released this month show most companies fall short of their promises despite the enthusiasm expressed in announcements from Governor Roy Cooper's office. The trend predates COVID-19 and the rise of remote work, as the Commerce Report looked at incentivized announcements dating back to the Job Development Investment Grant's first award in 2003 and running through June of this year, a total of 384 awards announced for a combined incentives total of nearly $4.6 billion. Overall, 164 of those companies either withdrew themselves from incentives consideration or failed to meet milestones and were outright terminated from the JDIG program. Christopher Chung, CEO of the Economic Development Partnership of North Carolina, says market conditions can simply change. Companies can't predict the future any better than anyone else, he says. They give their best estimate, but things like a pandemic come along and can disrupt the best laid plans. But John Quinterno, a professor at Duke University's Sanford School of Public Policy, says the report raises a lot of questions about whether incentives are actually as essential as we're told, as many of the companies terminated from the program still created jobs. If it's spending on an activity that was going to occur anyway, why should taxpayers be subsidizing that, he says. Triangle Girl Scouts receive millions. After 5 months, the secret is out. The Girl Scouts, North Carolina Coastal Pines Council, is the recipient of a $2.4 million donation from Mackenzie Scott, ex-wife of Amazon founder Jeff Bezos. CEO Lisa Jones calls the sum part of an $84.5 million donation from Scott to Girl Scouts of the USA and 29 local councils, unprecedented and transformative. It's the biggest single donation in her council's history, and it started with a phone call in May. Scott, who has given away more than $12 billion in 4 years since her divorce from Bezos, had reached out to the Girl Scouts personally and selected 29 Girl Scouts councils of the 111 in existence, including the Triangle Council, according to the organization. It came as a complete surprise to Jones and the entire Girl Scouts universe. You can't apply, you just receive a phone call, Jones says of Scott's philanthropy. We are so thrilled and honored. Raleigh tech firm files for bankruptcy. Weeks after a notice of default was issued by its big bank backer, Raleigh-based health technology firm MobileSmith has filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. According to the filing, the firm had $1.1 million in assets as of June 30, but debts exceeding $6 million. Attempts to reach the firm were unsuccessful. At issue was the $5 million loan the company signed with Comerica Bank, which basically bankrolled its operations, filings show. And finally, Avalo cuts flights from RDU to Florida. The lingering effects of a devastating hurricane are dampening holiday travel schedules at Raleigh-Durham International Airport. Airline startup Avalo Airlines plans for RDU are being cut in half as a scheduled flight to Fort Myers, Florida, has been scrapped. And now we turn to the On Greater Triangle Growth page written by Evan Hoopfer. Charter service plans to go public at $600 million. Fly Exclusive will use a SPAC to enter the public markets. A private charter service based in Kinston is going public at a valuation of $600 million. Fly Exclusive and EG Acquisition Corporation announced October 17 they entered an agreement that will take Fly Exclusive to the public markets. EG Acquisition is a special purpose acquisition company, or SPAC, a method of going public that has diminished in popularity this year amid rocky markets. The transaction expects to provide up to $310 million in proceeds, including $85 million of immediate funding through committed convertible notes and up to $225 million of SPAC cash held in trust. Jim Seagrave, founder and CEO of Fly Exclusive, will continue to lead the business. The Fly Exclusive leadership team will retain control of the company. Ensuring a generational company will continue to grow in Kinston, the company says in a joint statement. This capital, combined with our leadership team's significant aviation industry experience, will allow Fly Exclusive to rapidly grow our workforce, significantly expand our fleet, and further invest in our customer experience while maintaining our core values and family-first culture, says Seagrave, who also sold a charter business to Delta Airlines more than a decade ago. EG Acquisition Corporation is sponsored by investment platform Intrust Global and GMF Capital, both with offices in New York City. It raised $225 million in its initial public offering on May 26, 2021. Since its founding in 2015, Fly Exclusive has experienced rapid growth and is now one of the five largest private jet operators in the country. The company is opening its fifth and sixth hangars at Kinston's Global Transpark and employs about 800 people. Seagrave says he expects the company to cross the 1,000 job mark early in the first quarter next year. Meritage Homes proposes 900 home development in Granville County. A massive home development has been proposed in Granville County. Meritage Homes, a publicly traded home builder based in Scottsdale, Arizona, recently submitted plans for a community called Lyon Station, that's L-Y-O-N, that will have up to 890 new homes in Butner, north of Durham. The project would be on 334 acres along Interstate 85, about 5 minutes north of downtown Butner. Site plans call for 647 single-family lots and 201 townhomes. These figures could change as the process plays out, the application said. Mike Sorello, Butner's Planning and Economic Development Director, said the project is expected to go to the Planning Board in November. And in Sanford, 180 new apartments in the works. Another new apartment complex is being proposed in Sanford. The 180-unit complex would be located on 7.21 acres along True Love Street between NC Highway 87 and U.S. Highway 421 on the southeast side of the city. The property is owned by Roy Mashburn, who says the land has been in his family for 40 years. The applicant for the project is Charlotte-based Urban Design Partners. The complex, called True Love Apartments, in an application submitted to the city, would feature an amenity center and a dog park. And now we turn to the page written by Laura Bromette on retail and restaurants. Triangle Jeweler to open a retail store. Charles and Colvard's lab-grown gems to be in Morrisville store. A fine jewelry manufacturer based in Morrisville is making a big move after decades in business. Charles & Colvard is opening its first retail store location on October 24. The company, known as the original creator of the lab-grown gem moissanite, will sell its products directly to local customers from a store inside of its corporate headquarters. The move is in line with the company's switch to direct-to-consumer sales from its previous model of only distributing products to partners and independent retailers. In the 2 years that Don O'Connell has been CEO, Charles & Colvard has shifted to 70% of business being direct to consumer, with 30% being wholesale, he says. There is a consumer out there that likes to touch and feel the pieces of jewelry in real time, O'Connell says. We wanted to be able to provide that ability for that consumer to shop. We also wanted to provide a destination for that consumer to come here in Raleigh to our corporate headquarters to get that experiential feeling about the brand and what we stand for. The store will take up about 2,000 square feet of the company's space at 170 Southport Drive in Morrisville. Based on how the store performs, other retail locations could be opened in the future, O'Connell says. Charles & Colvard announced its 2022 fiscal year results in September, reporting a total of $43.1 million in net sales for the year, an all-time high for the company, which was founded in 1995. Our direct-to-consumer revenue grew 24% over the prior fiscal year, boosting our online channel segment net sales 15% over fiscal 2021 and 61% over fiscal 2020, further demonstrating the opportunity that we believe this channel represents for the company's continued growth, O'Connell says. As a retail company, nationwide inflation is currently top of mind for Charles & Colvard. We're having conversations every day asking, do we have a discretionary product, he says. Due to COVID, a lot of people delayed some of these events, engagements, and weddings. We feel that's going to carry us forward, even though we've got some inflationary headwinds. Food is the main driver for state fair attendees. Food is always a popular draw at the NC State Fair, and this year is no exception as attendees love grabbing unusual options. So far, Mexican corn and crushed Doritos in a bag and Pepsi and Texas Pete donuts are some of the most popular items this year. And finally, 321 opening new roasting facility. Raleigh-based 321 Coffee has plans to open a roasting facility, but it won't be like any others. Lenovo is giving 321 Coffee $150,000 and $15,000 worth of technology to help make the facility fully accessible to all workers. Starting in 2019, the coffee shop employs adults with intellectual and developmental disabilities. Nonprofit Engage NC is providing $50,000. There are many physical barriers that make roasting coffee with standard equipment difficult for our staff. Those bags weigh upwards of 30 pounds, and you typically have to raise them above your head to pour them into the roaster, owner Lindsay Rieg says. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the On Real Estate page written by Kaylee Thompson. 30-story Tower to Rise near Marbles, Connecticut Group plans luxury apartments on site. A new mixed-use development is set to rise 30 stories and include 373 multifamily units and 10,000 square feet of retail space in downtown Raleigh. Connecticut-based developer Vela Development Partners is leading the project, according to new site plans filed recently with the city. The tower, called Vela Longview, will be at 220 East Morgan Street, near Marbles Kids Museum and Moore Square. Site plans indicate there will be 30 stories with ground floor retail, structured parking, and residential units. Vela officials say the units will be studios, one- and two-bedroom apartments, one- and two-bedroom duplexes, and two- and three-bedroom penthouses. There is no market in the country that we believe in more than the Triangle, and we couldn't be more excited about the opportunity to build in the center of downtown Raleigh, just one block from Moore Square and walking distance from the CBD and the Warehouse District, Vela principal Nick Benjamin says. Amenities will total more than 20,000 square feet and will include a clubroom, bar, entertainment kitchen, fitness center, and outdoor pool. Vela officials say the cost for the project will be approximately $170 million, and construction is slated to start in mid-2023. The project should deliver in late 2025. The site is just under an acre and is currently a surface parking lot adjacent to the Marbles Museum. The proposed number of parking spaces for the new project is 395. The site is owned by Post Road Group, a private investment group in Stamford, Connecticut, which acquired it in 2021 for $10.35 million. Post Road bought it from Beverly and Gordon Smith, longtime Raleigh real estate investors, who were successful in getting the property rezoned from 7 stories to up to 40 stories with conditions, limiting any development to 30 stories. Raleigh's zoning heights are capped at 20 and 40 stories. Gordon Smith spearheaded a campaign to build the Explorers Museum, the predecessor to Marbles Museum. Post Road Group is part of the trio that founded Vela, a national real estate development company. $100 million development to feature restaurants, affordable housing. A new mixed-use project in Chapel Hill with affordable housing has the green light to move ahead. Trinzic Residential Group, a real estate developer in Dallas, will break ground in November on its Aura Chapel Hill project at 1000 Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard. The vertically integrated development will have 419 multifamily units and 15,000 square feet of retail, all centered on a linear one-acre park. 58 of the units will be townhomes. Affordable units are included in the project and are all privately funded by Trinzic. 29 of the apartments will be price-based on 65 to 80% of the area median income. 8 of the townhomes will be price-based on 80% AMI. The affordable units will be integrated throughout the community. Trinzic Managing Director Ryan Stewart says the more than $100 million project will take 24 months to complete. It has taken 3 years to get the project approved and moving forward. 5 other companies previously tried and failed to develop the property, located a few minutes north of downtown Chapel Hill. And finally, residences, retail, offices planned. Fuquay Verena has approved a rezoning request for an 18-acre development at the intersection of Purfoy and Old Honeycutt Road, south of Main Street. Lock 7 Development, a real estate firm based in Washington, D.C., is leading development on the project. The Locks at 614 Old Honeycutt Road will have 229 apartments, approximately 80,000 square feet of retail and office space, a walking trail, and an acre of common green space. Lock 7 Development expects to start construction by the fourth quarter of 2023 and anticipates delivering the first units within 12 months. And now we turn to the On Healthcare and Higher Education page written by Zach Ezone. After expansion plans, biotech now cutting, Boston-based Greenlight recently expanded an RTP. A Boston-based biotechnology company that recently completed an expansion in Research Triangle Park is now trimming its staff by about 25% as it adjusts to current market conditions. Greenlight Biosciences announced the reductions October 12 as part of a broader realignment of the company's operations. The restructuring will enable the company to focus on, quote, near-term value drivers, unquote, and extend its cash runway. Greenlight joins a growing list of biotech companies that have scaled back operations amid worries over the economy and investors tightening their pockets when it comes to funding. The company, with over 300 workers before the cuts, expects to save about $13 million in direct costs through the headcount reduction. Greenlight expects the realignment will generate savings from other direct and indirect cost areas, according to a securities filing posted October 12. Employee separations will take place by the end of the month. This realignment comes following a range of cost-cutting measures instituted earlier this year and will help us better position Greenlight for longer-term growth, CEO Andre Sarrour said in a statement. Thomas Crampton, Greenlight Senior Vice President and Head of Corporate Affairs, says the overall impact on Greenlight's RTP operations will be limited, but doesn't provide exact numbers. Earlier this year, the company initiated a significant local expansion into a facility that includes about 63,000 square feet of lab, office, and greenhouse space off Davis Drive. Greenlight had planned to grow its local headcount from 30 to 70 employees. As of the end of March, the company had 312 full-time employees, according to a securities filing. The company in August raised about $109 million through a private placement with new and existing investors. Proceeds from the raise and the company's cash of $44.1 million at the end of June provided Greenlight with sufficient capital to get through the first half of 2023. Through this realignment, Greenlight will shift its focus from early-stage research programs to those that are closer to commercialization. The company is developing ribonucleic acid, or mRNA, technology for products in humans and plant health. On the plant and animal health side, Greenlight is focused on obtaining approval from the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency for a crop protection solution called Calantha, and then subsequently commercializing the product targeting the Colorado potato beetle. The company is also working toward regulatory submission of a second crop protection solution targeting varroa mites, which are harmful to honeybee colonies. RTP Biotech earns $17.5 million up front in deal with Bayer subsidiary. A biotech in Research Triangle Park has landed millions in cash through a new collaboration with a chance to earn hundreds of millions more. Tavros Therapeutics has entered a collaboration agreement with Vividion Therapeutics, a California subsidiary of the life sciences giant Bayer AG. Together, the companies aim to define novel drug targets and biomarkers. Tavros, led by CEO and co-founder Ewan McDonnell, a Duke University graduate, is based around its precision oncology platform, which the company is developing to improve and accelerate the discovery of novel targeted oncology therapies. Tavros uses its platform to work with other pharmaceutical companies developing oncology drugs while also building out its own internal pipeline. By using its platform to work with other companies while also building its own pipeline, Tavros is able to have a greater clinical impact, McDonnell says. Additionally, this approach creates funding opportunities outside of solely raising money through the venture capital route. Vividion is paying Tavros $17.5 million in cash up front. And finally, startup led by PRA Health Vets keeps growing. A Raleigh-based service provider to medical technology companies has completed its eighth acquisition and reached a headcount of 1,300 since launching last year. Established by former employees of PRA Health Sciences, acquired last year by Icon PLC, Varinex continues an acquisition streak that began early last year as it builds its capability to work with medtech companies of all sizes and at any stage of product development. This month, the company acquired two companies based in Sweden called Divicia and Klarvin. The former offers clinical expertise to medtech companies, while the latter provides guidance in regulatory affairs and quality assurance. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the Viewpoint page to read the editor's notebook, written by Sugata Mukherjee, editor-in-chief for Triangle Business Journal. Banks, regulators start the dance on CRE deals. In about 2 weeks' time, U.S. banks will file their quarterly call reports, also known as the Uniform Bank Performance Report, that will detail their financial health. What makes this one of the most important reports in recent years is that banks will have to report their loan concentration number tied to commercial real estate. A loan concentration number is defined as the total of direct, indirect, or contingent real estate obligations of more than 25% of the bank's Tier 1 capital, plus the allowance for loan losses. Generally speaking, if the loan concentration number is below 300%, bank regulators are satisfied. If they are over 500%, they may be coming down for a visit with the bank leadership. So why this amount of scrutiny on commercial real estate? That's because commercial real estate, for the most part, is the largest loan portfolio for more than 50% of the banks in this country. In this year's mid-year report, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, the regulator of banks chartered by states, issued a report stating CRE loans topped $2.7 trillion in 2022. In 2008, it was at $1.9 trillion. At the end of 2021, FDIC-regulated banks held $1.1 trillion in CRE loans. At year-end 2021, 25% of banks had a funded CRE loan concentration in excess of 300% of Tier 1 capital and reserves for loan losses, FDIC examiners wrote. This is relatively unchanged compared to year-end 2019 prior to the pandemic. But things are shifting. As noted above, the third quarter numbers won't be released for another couple of weeks, but second quarter end numbers started painting a picture that most real estate developers, specifically in certain sectors, would rather not see. Typically, regulators have stamped CRE-heavy banks in two ways. When construction and land development loans exceed 100% of the risk-based capital, or RBC, and when the overall CRE, that includes construction, land, industrial, retail, office, and others, to RBC ratio exceeds 300%, and the three-year CRE growth is above 50%. A Janie Montgomery Scott research note published recently stated about 9% of banks exceed one or both regulatory CRE guidelines, modestly above pre-pandemic levels when it was 6%, though well below pre-Great Recession levels of 18%. While Janie researchers will not estimate the percentage at the end of the third quarter, some believe 12% of the banks could have broken the threshold by the third quarter. And that's making banks, primarily community banks, very wary. It is unlikely one will find a banker these days who will say the financial institution simply has stopped making loans, but they will be quick to point out that they have become far more prudent because regulators are watching. Office, hotel, and retail sectors likely will face the most severe headwinds in the next couple of quarters, but deals will get done, especially if real estate developers can show they have most of the new building leased out. FDIC officials admit CRE loan delinquencies are at historically low levels, and aggregate loan losses have been nominal. These trends are at least partly attributable to stimulus and relief programs, as well as low borrowing costs, they write in the report. In addition, banks worked extensively with borrowers experiencing stress during the pandemic, which likely suppressed delinquencies and may have ultimately limited losses by giving borrowers time and flexibility to address issues, FDIC officials add. But stimulus money is long gone, and the ever-prevalent dance between banks and regulators has begun. And also on the Viewpoint page, we have a column written by John Hood, who is a John Locke Foundation board member in Raleigh. The headline, "Some Associate Degrees Have Big Payoffs." Suppose you're about to graduate from a North Carolina high school, your grades are good but not great, and your primary goal after graduation is to get the schooling you need for a fulfilling career with good earnings potential. Should you head off to university or enroll in your local community college? For many folks, the latter is the better bet. Trust me, I have receipts. To be more precise, Preston Cooper has the receipts, and I've perused them. A senior fellow at the Foundation for Research on Equal Opportunity, Cooper produced a study last year that calculated the return on investment for some 30,000 bachelor's degrees conferred by public and private universities across the country. I wrote about his findings at the time, spotlighting the wide disparity of gains from, say, an economics degree from Duke University, an average boost of $2.7 million in lifetime earnings after subtracting the cost of getting the degree, and a chemistry degree from the same institution a net loss of $50,000 in lifetime earnings. My point wasn't that students ought not to major in chemistry or in a relatively low-paying field such as dance or drama if it's truly their passion, but if the allure of post-secondary education is mostly the financial payoff, less expensive options may make more sense. This year, Cooper turned his attention to cost and earnings data for 14,000 grad school degrees and 17,000 associate degrees and certificates. As before, his cost estimates include not only tuition fees and charges, but also the full-time wages one must forego for the period required to complete each program. On average, of course, holders of graduate degrees earn more than those with progress who progress no further than an undergraduate degree. They, in turn, have higher average earnings than those who progress no further than community college. But averages don't necessarily speak to what individual students should do. Consider, for example, the associate degree conferred by Wake Technical Community College in the field of industrial production technology. Assuming on-time completion, it has a return on investment of about $884,991, higher than that of many four-year degrees conferred by nearby NC State University. How about Wake Tech's degree in heating, air conditioning, ventilation, and refrigeration? Its on-time completion ROI is $601,217, with salaries averaging about $44,000 by age 25 and reaching $67,000 by age 35. Sure, an NC State degree in a technical or engineering field has a larger payoff, but what if completing such a program is beyond your capabilities? You might well be better off doing the two-year HVAC program instead of getting a bachelor's in a less rigorous subject or, as happens all too often, never finishing your degree. Let's head west for another comparison. The ROI for a biology degree from UNC Asheville is $315,269. In Asheville, Buncombe Tech's Allied Health Program, an associate degree in diagnostic, intervention, or treatment has an ROI of $668,817. These figures all assume completion on schedule. Students drop out of community colleges, too. Even after adjusting for the risk of non-completion, however, the two-year programs frequently come out ahead of the four-year programs. They cost a lot less. And finally, our Business Pulse survey question. Do you plan to go to the NC State Fair this year? Total number of responses, 176. 53% say no. 22% say yes. 15% say maybe. And yes have already gone 10%. And we've run out of time for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. So long until next time, and thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.